This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Welcome to episode 91 of Tea Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is someone who doesn't need to change his face, because we all like him as it is.
Aww.
And it's my good friend Dave. Good evening, Dave. How are you?
Good evening, Yannick. I am very well indeed, thank you. It's my face is just, you know, the epitome of perfection. If is. Perfection is defined as aging, sagging, and all the other things that this face is. But, yeah. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. I have found the time-traveling lawnmower, and I finally had time and good weather good enough to mow the lawn in my backyard. So I'm tired,
excellent.
But happy.
Happy. Good, good.
Yes, good.
That is good to know.
Yes. On tonight's episode, we are going to review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 19, Duet. And oh my God, what a good episode. Without spoiling anything.
Yeah.
And we'll probably talk about this episode and have a bit of trivia at the end. And then we're going to talk about what we're going to do next week.
Indeed.
So without further ado, let's start the review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 19, Duet.
Let's fly.
Oh, please. So, on the teaser, it is a typical day in Ops as Major Kira and Lieutenant Dax exchange childhood stories. A Cobarian freighter, the Rak Miunis, arrives with a passenger who requires medical assistance for a condition known as Kalanora syndrome. Dr. Bashir is unfamiliar with the disease, but Kira recognizes it immediately. The disease originated from a mining accident at the Gelitep labor camp, which Kira helped liberate during the occupation. So she goes to greet the new arrival in the infirmary, believing him to be a Bajoran. Yeah. When Kira reaches the infirmary, she finds Bashir's patient is not a Bajoran, but Cardassian. She immediately calls for security. Surprise,
what?
Surprise! Yeah, she was not pleased to see a Cardassian there.
Not a clue what's going on. A clue.
But a great start.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I was like, well, not when I watched it tonight, because it's like the fourth time I watched it, but I remember the first time I was like, what?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was for me this time, having seen it for the first time. I've never seen this episode before.
Yeah. So, we're on Act 1. The Cardassian man runs past Kira and onto the promenade, only to be stopped by Constable Odo and two deputies. Kira and Bashir follow shortly, and Bashir is obviously clueless. Kira informs Odo that the Cardassian is a war criminal, and Odo escorts the man to the security office. Ta-da! So now I understand.
As factual statements go, Bashir is obviously clueless. Well, duh. Bashir is clueless.
Yes.
End of.
Whatever the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't have to involve any war criminals or...
No.
Or strange aliens. He's clueless.
Nope.
In Odo's office, Kira admits to Commodore Benjamin Sisko and Odo that the Bajoran Provisional Government has not listed the Cardassian, Maritza, for any war crimes. However, she's certain that there is no way to contract Kalanora syndrome except for the mining accident at Gelitep. As she describes the brutal conditions at the camp, her voice cracks with emotion. Sisko decides to talk to Maritza alone. Yeah. I have to say, Nana Visitor, she nailed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I say this a bit later on, at the beginning of Act 2, but I'm going to, I'll call it out now. Her acting in this episode is absolutely on point.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is. When you think about it, we've had a lot of very powerful episodes with Kira as a key part of certain high emotion plot lines.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the one, and I can't remember what the episode name was, the one when she was on the moon that they were about to start mining and she set fire to his house and
yes.
and blew his pizza oven up. She was incredibly emotional there as well. And I did call it out at this point in the review. She's doing it again. She's doing the whole getting so worked up and emotional over something that she is clearly so vested into that it is affecting her judgment.
Yeah.
I mean, she calls it out as herself later on in the episode that she is Sisko's number one.
Yeah.
Right? She's the first officer on, or the equivalent, the executive officer, if you like, of the space station.
Yes.
And yet, at times, she displays characteristics that are absolutely not befitting of an executive officer.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, this is one of those times.
True. Now, I know this is a TV series and there are actors playing characters, but and so there's the acting of the characters, which in this case were just spot on, but also the writing of that scene and the whole the episode in the whole, where we may talk about that later, but everything was very well written, very well played. Let's keep that for the end of the episode. But yeah, at this point in the episode, I think that's when we understand that that's not going to be a comedy episode. That's not going to be a lighthearted story.
No, you could tell that pretty early on.
Yeah. In the brig, when Sisko asks Maritza about his illness, Maritza claims he has Potrick syndrome, a similar condition to Kalanora, and that his medication is the same as that which is used to treat Kalanora syndrome. Further, he denies ever being at a labor camp, as he is a file clerk who resides on Korra 2. A Bajoran prisoner in another holding cell wakes as the Cardassian speaks and yells for Odo, refusing to be held in the same room as Maritza.
Right. Why?
Yes, why?
Obviously, this Bajoran prisoner recognizes who Maritza is, or either who Maritza is or who Maritza represents.
Yes.
So there's a lot of unanswered questions at this particular point in the episode.
Absolutely. Just a quick thank you to Fragilities, who just followed us on Twitch. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, that's another step towards...
or goodies?
Affiliate, I think it's...
okay.
It's the thing. But
excellent. Follow us on Twitch, people.
Yeah, we're going to need a lot more than that. But we're not doing that for fame and fortune. Just for fortune.
Aren't we? Right, thank you. Yes,
fortune, yes.
So at the end of that scene, we see kind of a sidelong look of Sisko as he was kind of considering what had just happened. But he looked really scary, almost like he was plotting something sinister.
Sisko? Oh, I didn't notice that.
Do you not remember? Oh, okay. It was at the end of that scene before they went back into his office. And it was kind of a... Sorry, that doesn't work for anybody watching, for listening. But it was a really sinister, evil mastermind kind of look.
Okay, I didn't see that exactly, but I remember that he was. I think you can see the cogs running in his brain. Mm. You know, wondering what's going on. Why? Was I told that he had Kalanora, and now he's telling he doesn't and. He's trying to put the pieces together.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so back to the Bajoran in the cell. I just thought, you know, it was just a random character just there for maybe comic relief or something.
Possibly. We didn't know his name at that point, so it wasn't obvious that he was going to have any particular role in the in the episode. And to be fair, for the majority of it, he doesn't.
Nope. Back in Sisko's office, Bashir confirms that a bioprobe proved Maritza's condition is Kalanora, not Protic syndrome.
Oh.
His conversation with Sisko is interrupted as Kira contacts Sisko to inform him that he has an incoming transmission from the Bajoran Minister of State. Kaval has contacted Sisko to congratulate and thank him for detaining Maritza. However, Sisko reminds Kaval that the Cardassian has done nothing wrong and he therefore has no reason to detain the man much longer. The minister assertively assures Sisko that the man will pay if he was indeed at Galitep and reminds Sisko that Deep Space Nine is a Bajoran station.
Those Bajorans, they're nothing but trouble.
Yes, Sisko is always in this situation where he doesn't have to report to the Bajoran government, and yet he's in charge of a Bajoran station, so he needs to balance the two. I was going to say communities. I think I'm doing too many community things. The two sides of that.
He's in a really odd position because he's not really much more than a caretaker. And I don't mean to downplay his role, but it's a Bajoran station built by the Cardassians during the Cardassian occupation of Bajor. He's come in as an outsider, as part of the Federation, and is now looking after this ship on behalf of the Bajorans.
Yes.
They keep pulling this, please don't forget, this is a Bajoran station.
Yeah.
And yet, Sisko doesn't care. And I love that.
Yes, that's Sisko. But yeah, the Bajorans often refer to the Federation as, you know, the new Cardassians, as they're running the station as if it was a Federation thing, but it's still a Bajoran station. Well,
okay,
you know, except for the killings and the tortures and stuff like that.
Okay, so this is where I display a little bit of ignorance. Bearing in mind, I am new to DS9. This is the first time I've seen this season, but we're also at the end of season one, so I really don't have an excuse. But my question is, why are the Federation running DS9?
It was said that in order to keep peace and keep an eye on the Cardassian and prevent them from coming back, Bajor couldn't do that on their own, and so they asked the Federation to help.
So the Federation is there as a deterrent to the Cardassians.
That's the original deal, yeah.
Okay.
They are there to make sure the Cardassian won't come back.
But they could do that as a military resident of the station rather than the command of a station, of the station.
They could, but I don't know why. I don't really know why they put Sisko in charge. Because it's called Star Trek Deep Space Nine and not, you know, Bajor Deep Space Nine.
Bajor Trek. Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it works, don't get me wrong. You're right, it wouldn't be Star Trek if you didn't have a Star Trek commander as the lead character in the series. But I don't know.
Maybe Ro, if he's still there, can shine a light on our ignorance.
Well, mine, you probably know a lot more. Well, you do know a lot more about it than I do.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I remember correctly.
No, maybe not. Back to school.
Yes, and back to our review. We are on Act 2. Finding Kira sitting at a table in the replimat, Sisko joins her to inform her that Odo, as chief of security, will take over the Maritza investigation. He acknowledges that Minister Kaval put Kira in charge, but he does not feel Kira can be entirely objective in the investigation. While Kira acknowledges that she is indeed not objective, she promises, as his first officer, to handle the case fairly, as she owes it to the victims of Galitep. Sisko reluctantly agrees and informs Odo of the change via his comm badge. I need to stop thinking of Gallifrey when I read Galitep.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so I think Odo was kind of expecting the call. Well, he said he understood the decision, but I don't know.
Is that just Odo being Odo, though? Because he very rarely displays any form of emotion, as we've mentioned before, although there are obvious exceptions to that. But what's he going to do? Is he going to stamp his foot on the ground and say, I wanted that investigation. I wanted to do it. Why? No.
No.
He'll just say, understood. And then once he's disconnected the call, he'll then start throwing stuff around his office.
Or throw himself on the wall and, you know, slide.
and slide down.
He could have reminded Cisco, you know, that as the chief of security, he could see Kira in charge of the investigation as being a threat or some mm-hmm. you know, something that is not, she's not supposed to do.
He's done that but before. I think,
yeah, but I think he understands.
Yeah.
Odo is releasing an intoxicated Bajoran as Kira enters the security office. The man, Kanan, tells Odo he wants to know when the Cardassian will be hanged. Once Kanan is gone, Odo informs Kira that he has done a background check and confirmed what little they know about Maritza so far. So now...
He's got a name.
He's got a name.
He's got a name. Mm-hmm.
So either he's going to die or he's going to be part of the story, or both.
Yes.
So he doesn't have a red shirt, but there's a target on his back.
Yes.
As Kira enters the holding cell area, Maritza finishes a bowl of Semhal stew, which he says could use some Yamok sauce.
I had to stop the review at this point because I could not stop laughing at the irony of Maritza wanting some Yamok sauce after what happened a few episodes ago with the Yamok sauce, which Quark didn't want, so he went through pains to get rid of, and obviously they made a fortune out of it, but still... placing absolutely no value at all on Yamok sauce, and there it is. A customer wants it.
Yeah, well, is it worth stocking, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of bottles of Yamok sauce for one prisoner?
How about 10?
10 what? 10 bottles?
10, well, wrappages. 10, 10 wrappages of Yamok sauce in case they want it.
Yeah.
Cannot the replicator replicate Yamok sauce?
Probably.
So why would you even trade 50,000,010 wrappages of Yamok sauce in the first place?
Well, if you're on the moon, like, you know, the one you referred to previously, that maybe they didn't have replicators. You know,
oh, that's,
he was,
yeah, that's
growing.
That's a good point.
The guy was growing his own vegetables, so.
Right. No, exactly.
He needs Yamok sauce. Kira commences interrogating Maritza about his claim of having missed the honor of being at Galitep, confronting him with the results of the bioscan that proved him to have been. Promising to make his lie more opaque, Maritza confesses to having served at the camp as a file clerk, without any connection to the atrocities that has taken place there under Guldarrail, even as he minimizes them, turning Kira's interrogation into a debate over the death being the results of fights between the workers and industrial accidents, Maritza's story, and systematic abuse and brutality, Kira's story. Yeah, well, we were starting to go into deep and dark territories there, where they start to exchange memories, quote unquote, of that period on that planet. So clearly, there's two versions of the stories, but I don't know. It's that kind of episode where I was like, "Where is this going?" And it's not funny. It's not. I don't know how to describe that. I was just watching and waiting for what's next. Kind of hypnotized by the stories and the exchange between those two.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is where the problem comes when you watch the entire thing and then you try and go back and recall what you thought and felt at the time, because it's been marred by you knowing what happens next. But I was thinking at this time that Maritza isn't quite the real deal. There's something mm-hmm. wrong with what he's telling us. Whilst I believe, at this point, I believed that he was a filing clerk at Galitep, the whole thing about... Oh, in fact, this is the next sentence. The whole thing about the situation not being as Kira recalled it to be, that it wasn't brutality and rape and pillage, it was more internal disputes and roughhousing. That didn't sit right with me at all, because, well, she'd been there. She was there. She liberated the camp from the Cardassian oppression. So she must have seen firsthand what was going on there. So to be told by somebody who, yeah, I believe they were there, but I don't believe they were close enough to actually understand what was happening. So you've got a classic Big Brother scenario here, where you've got somebody who is far removed from the actual situation, believing the propaganda they'd been told by the people in power. Oceania is not at war with Eurasia. You believe it. It's not true, but you believe it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. What I thought was that he may have been aware of the situation, but still giving the official propaganda version, even though he got caught. You know, when you repeat the same thing over and over and over again, you start believing it yourself. So I was more in that frame of mind, where I was like, okay, was there? There's no reason to doubt that everything Kira says was true, but he said, maybe he said that to himself, or he said that to everyone he met since there, that it was not true, and now he's maybe he believes that himself, or maybe he wants, he just doesn't know how to say that another way. And
yeah, that makes sense.
I guess both of our hypotheses make sense at this point.
Yes. And, well, as we go on.
Yeah. Maritza tells Kira that it was Guldarrael himself who began circulating rumors of large-scale massacres at Galitep, based on the logic that the rumors on their own would be just as effective as having actually killed millions of Bajorans in achieving the Cardassians' main goal. To keep you Bajorans thinking of yourself as victims, to keep you afraid and helpless.
So it's all about control.
Yeah. And it does make sense, actually, when you have a place like, I mean, a labor camp, it's not a tourist place, so there's probably not going to be a lot of outsiders coming in and out of the camp. So, yeah, it makes sense. You can tell whatever you want if nobody comes and checks. So.
Yeah, and it keeps the 1984 analogy alive as well.
Yes.
Because, again, you're not making your own people believe the propaganda you're trying to put across. You're now trying to mislead an entire other race of people into thinking that something happened that didn't. So, it's a huge deception if it's true.
Indeed. And with that, we're on Act 3. Having learned of the detention of Amin Maritza as a Cardassian national, Guldukat hails Commander Sisko via subspace, demanding Maritza's release and noting that his detention breached a Federation promise to allow free and safe passage through the station and its jurisdiction. Sisko stalls for a time, telling Dukat that while he would like nothing better than to release Maritza, there were still some inconsistencies in his story that needed to be cleared up. Dukat gives Sisko a thinly veiled warning about allowing Bajoran thirst for violence to create tension between the Federation and the Cardassians. He closes the channel with the warning that the Cardassians will hold Sisko responsible should those Bajoran hatemongers get their hands on Maritza.
First thing I noticed on that then is Gul Dukat saying that Maritza's detention breached a Federation promise to allow safe and free passage through the station and its jurisdiction. Well, if there is a suspicion of a crime having been committed, then surely that Federation promise doesn't apply. You're not going to allow people that you suspect to have been guilty of a crime to go.
Probably not, but what if it's someone, you know, from another system that, you know, committed a crime on yet another system? Do you have jurisdiction to not let them go if they haven't done anything in, you know, in Federation space or Bajoran space, which is not the case here? Okay, but hypothetically,
that is a really good question.
It is.
I don't know. It's a good point.
If anybody has anything to say about that, you can send us an email or contact us on Telegram, and we will tell you that everything you would need to know for that at the end of this review or episode.
Indeed so. And the second thing, that is the first time I've ever heard the word Cardassia used.
Is it?
Obviously, the Cardassians are the name of the people from a particular planet or a particular system. And it does make logical sense that they would be from a place called Cardassia, but I have never you know, 19 episodes in, we're almost at the end of season one, I've never heard the use of the phrase, of the word Cardassia as their home planet before.
Yeah, okay. I guess, you know, having seen this series twice now, just didn't notice this thing, yeah.
It just sounded odd,
as you said,
to me.
It's absolutely logical that Cardassian come from Cardassia, as it's logical that humans come from Earth.
Right.
You know, Bajorans, Bajor, Cardassians, Cardassia, humans, yep. Earth.
Earth, yeah. Well, it makes more sense in the Mirror universe because Terrans come from Terra.
Yes.
Being humans and Earth, but still.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Kira is on the promenade, gazing out of the window. When Dax asks her what she's looking for, Kira replies, answers. She confides in Dax that even if Maritza is just a file clerk, she still wants to see him punished, and that in some way, she wants him to be more than just a file clerk, to actually be something worse. As far as Kira is concerned, Maritza is guilty by virtue of simply having been on Galite, and that his trial and punishment would bring some satisfaction or closure to the Bajorans. However, Dax believes that Kira is trying too hard to believe what she's saying, and that she already knows that punishing Maritza without reason would not serve any purpose, because Kira already knows that simple vengeance is not enough. Dax walks away to leave Kira to her thoughts.
Ouch.
Ouch. Yes. And I have to agree with Dax.
Completely.
She was trying too much, yeah. Too hard.
Yeah. Kira has already made her mind up, and there is nothing that has been said so far that can make her change her mind, despite being presented with some fairly compelling evidence as to why she might actually be wrong.
Yeah, that's Kira being Kira. She had her mind set on something and she's not going to bulge.
But she actually gave something away that I never, ever expected her to say. She said, in some way, I wanted him to be more than just a file clerk. She's trying to project Maritza into something... Now I've got to be careful what I say. Trying to project Maritza into something that everybody else knows he's not.
Yes, because she convinced herself, you know, half a second after she saw him. Yeah, she just associated the disease with the fact that he's Bajoran, so therefore he's an evil character that needs to be punished, and that's it.
Absolutely, guilt by association. And that's... I'll do the trivia at the end like I normally do, but that is a big part of what this episode was actually trying to convey.
Mm-hmm. Now, from the filming point of view, why didn't Kira turn when Dax came? Well, first of all, they were very close to each other, but I believe that's, again, because of this 4x3 screen format, so they had to be very close to each other. But it was weird that she never turned around to look Dax in her... Dax was always behind her, and Kira never turned. I thought it was well made because Kira was in her thought, but I thought it brought something more, you know, than just a conversation between the two. It was really something like if Dax was like the voice of her conscience or something. I'm probably overthinking that.
No, you're not. It's a good observation. Kira and Dax have a reasonably strong friendship. They certainly appear to have a respect for each other as beings. So I suspect that when Dax came into the room that Kira happened to be in, she knew she was there. And she was aware of her presence. Yeah, I've seen Sisko do it before, I'm sure, at least once.
Yeah.
Where you know someone's there, you know they're about to speak. Turning around and looking at them will actually... I don't know, it doesn't help with the plot point at all. Because you can still see that Kira is battling really hard internally with the situations she's been presented with.
Agreed.
So I'm not convinced that turning around to even face or even acknowledge Dax would have given anything to that scene.
No, as I said, it was really strong scene.
Mm. Oh, it was.
Film as it was, yes.
Totes.
Having consulted the Bajoran Central Archives, Commodore Sisko informs his senior staff that Maritza's claims are accurate. There was a filing clerk on Galitep by the name of Amin Maritza, A further claim that Maritza had been teaching fighting at a Cardassian military academy on Korra II is also verified. The archives have also sent the only known photograph of Maritza from his days at Galitep, a very blurred image with him in the background on one side. Dax carries out an image enhancement routine, which cleans the image enough to show that the man in the brig claiming to be Amin Maritza and the man in the picture identified as him are not the same man.
What?
I have to say, that cleaning routine or enhancement thingy needs to be, you know, patented, because it does a very, very good job.
I think it's the same technology that you see in police procedurals, where you look at some CCTV image and you zoom in on it, and all you get is just like blob of blur of someone's face, and somebody, oh, just clean that up a bit, tap, 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 tap,
yes,
and you get a perfectly clean image of someone's face. That doesn't happen.
No, that doesn't. That doesn't. Especially when the CCTV is, you know, from a night scene, and then suddenly you have bright face on the screen.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. But we're in 2023, whatever it is, so...
Yes.
Yeah, image enhancement, yes.
Hello, Monica. Welcome,
hey, Monica,
to the chat. We are reviewing the penultimate episode of Deep Space Nine, Season 1. Examining the images of the two other Cardassians in the shot, standing in profile relative to the camera, Sisko has an idea. He asks Dask to enhance one of them. The imaging program extrapolates the profile into an impression of the full face, which does match the man in the holding cell. Dax checks the photo's legend, which presents the senior staff with the revelation that the man in the photo, thus identified and thus the man in their custody, is in fact Gul Dareal.
Dun, dun, dun. No way!
Nah, it's even a bigger algorithm than the previous one, which is able to reconstruct a full face from just a nose and the mouth.
Yeah, because yes, indeed. Because when they completed the profile, the face was half hidden behind one of the other people that just magically disappeared from the image.
Yes.
And there was Gul Dareal, completely unencumbered or uninterrupted by any other being in that photograph. What a load of...
Yes, yes. But, hey, we needed some clues, so there we go. Suspension of disbelief.
Well, they know exactly. But I'm reluctant to complain about this or be too critical about it, because otherwise it will spoil what I say right at the very end of this episode.
All right, okay. So let's wait to the end of the episode.
But before we do that, I would like to just take this moment to welcome Neela, our latest named character, into the crew. I hope and wish for you a long life.
That's O'Brien's assistant, right?
That is correct, yes.
Yes. So she has a name, so...
It's the first time we've met her. It's the first episode she's appeared in, and we now know her name.
I fear for
her. Yes. Now, I have an idea what is going to be happening with that particular character. I believe it happens next week. So, you know, let's see if the continuity is there.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You too, you have a target on your back.
Yeah.
Kira immediately confronts Dareal with this knowledge. He accepts his fate, noting that the Bajorans can only execute him once, and proceeds to taunt Kira with his accomplishments. Rejecting the notion of a war crimes tribunal on the grounds that there had been no war, the Bajorans have surrendered so quickly, he claims that he did everything he did to wipe out Bajoran scum because it needed to be done. He disavows any guilt on the part of his soldiers for having carried out the atrocities in question, and derides the effort of the Bajoran resistance to liberate their homeworld, dismissing Kira's cell in particular as a mere annoyance. Kira coldly challenges him to include his revelations in his testimony to the tribunal, knowing full well that they will sentence him to death. And he replies, "Let them! Don't you see? It doesn't change anything. Kill me! Torture me! It doesn't matter. You've already lost, Major. You can never undo what I've accomplished. The dead will still be dead."
Oof.
Wow. This whole end of the scene with the speech was like... That's not typical Star Trek. It's dark, it's heavy. And I was, yeah, at the end of the scene, I was like, wow.
But they do it every so often. Every so often, Star Trek will come along and they will do a particular scene in a particular episode that just goes boom. And it just blows you away. And this was one of them. It was such a good scene.
Yeah, yeah. I have nothing to add, really. It was it's all said in this last sentence. I mean, you can never undo what I've accomplished. The dead will still be dead. And what can you respond to that? It's well.
But this is the speech. It is the typical manner of a true war criminal.
Yeah.
A psychopath, somebody who is beyond capable of performing that kind of genocide, mass atrocity, and be proud of it.
Yeah.
And it's for that reason I didn't believe a word he said.
Oh.
Something is not right here.
I didn't get that at this point, but a bit later on the episode. But no, I was sold. On at this moment,
I wasn't. I'm afraid the phrase "methinks he doth protest too much" was going through my head. He was so vehement and so vocal about his own achievements. Even the biggest psychopath in the world, I don't know. This just takes it one step further. And at this point in the review, ignoring what we know at the end.
Yeah.
It didn't sound right to me. Something wasn't right. Something was wrong here. And I know that's the same thing.
I don't know. I mean, if you take any movie with a villain of a certain, you know, caliber, at some point, they will get the good guys and maybe, you know, put them in a very dangerous situation. And they will brag about what they're doing or what they are about to do or what they did. So that fit with that general design, as he was bragging. Now he's been discovered, so the only thing he has to do now is, you know, go all in and say, well, yeah, I did that and I kicked your rear end, and that's you know, diminishing what he did. But you understand what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and I've watched enough Bond films to understand exactly the kind of character you're talking about. Before they end up attempting to kill James Bond, they always tell exactly what their plan was from A to Z.
Yes.
But the difference here is that whereas most Bond villains put themselves across as to how clever they were and how smart they were and how they were able to outsmart the good guys, what Maritza was doing was more pride and self-acknowledgement of what he achieved. Look how wonderful I am. Look how brilliant I am. Look at all these things that I've achieved. Rather than saying, look how clever I was.
Yeah, okay.
It's a subtle difference.
Okay.
But in my head, this doesn't sound right at all.
Fair enough. It's good that we all have different views on those episodes, because now that means it's really well written and we don't know where we're going.
No, that's what exactly. It means. But I am very much struggling with the fact that obviously I know what happens next. I'm trying not to include that in what I'm saying, because as far as the review's concerned, we haven't got there yet.
Yeah. Well, we don't know where we're going, but we know where we are. We are on Act 4. Shaken to the core, Kira is given a glass of Maralthian Sea Vale, I think, by Odo, from Quark's personal stash. So that must be something. You know, I don't know what Odo promised Quark for that, but I'm sure he holds Quark one. And Quark will come back one day.
It's on his tab.
To collect. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, she was given a glass of Maralthian Sea Ale by Odo, who suggests that she go and lie down after the shock of the revelations she has just been forced to hear. She refuses to do so. That would be what Daryl would want, to send the Bajoran scurrying off to hide in a corner. She goes on to tell Odo what Daryl said about the Shakar cell, leading Odo to counsel her to not reveal that kind of personal information. But Kira hadn't revealed her membership of Shakar to Daryl during the interrogation.
Mm.
Yeah, and I didn't even noticed that when they first said that. This sets Odo thinking. As important as Daryl was in the Cardassian occupational leadership, he wouldn't necessarily have known that Kira was a member of the Shakaar cell. Had he been in charge of putting down the resistance, then he probably would have known. But he was in charge of a labor camp. Why would he have had that information? Realizing that something doesn't fit, Kira goes back to interrogate Daryl again, while Odo tells the computer to review all off-station requests for information about Major Kira within the previous 8 months.
Working.
Yes, so let's ignore the random 8 month period, because why not?
Didn't get that.
10, 12, why not? But then, why would Kira's membership, you know, apart the fact that Kira was in a Shakaar cell, would be available to anyone in the universe just with a simple request for personal information? And why do you have requests for personal information in the first place?
See, I wouldn't even have expected that to have been on Starfleet's records.
No.
At all, because it's not something... It's not something that, you know, on... Well, no, it wouldn't be Starfleet, would it? It would be... it would be Starfleet, because it's a Federation-run...
Yeah.
Whatchamacallit. So there would have to be something about Kira working with Starfleet officers that would have to be in place. But regardless of whichever system happens to be holding her personal information, it's not going to be on the form, have you or are you, or have you at any time been a member of a terrorist cell?
Yes. Yes, no, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. So it would only be there if Kira had, either Kira had told somebody, or it had come through some form of intelligence. If it had come through as some form of intelligence, it's very unlikely you would find it from a standard computer inquiry to a central database.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it was needed for the story, but I'm pretty sure they could have found something related to Cardassian military or something, rather than just having that, but...
Possible, I suppose.
Possibly, yeah.
But it's also ignoring the fact that not all inquiries about a person's background would have been done through the DS9 computer. It's entirely probable and possible that some, you know, there's this thing called talking. So they may have opened a secure channel to another person and actually, you know, asked them.
Yeah.
So if that was the case, it wouldn't be on the computer.
So Maritza or Daryl is a Cardassian looking for information about Bajoran and getting that from a Federation computer. That's the bit of the episode that is a bit, you know, far-fetched, but hey, that's okay. I can live with that.
Yeah.
Monica says in the chat that Starfleet Intel is nosy. Yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, she's number one, so she probably had to go through a very thorough screening. I don't know.
Again, who's employing her?
The Bajoran government.
Right.
She's only there as a liaison.
But she's still second in command of the station, so...
Well...
It's an agreement, isn't it?
Tipple was number one of the NX-01, and she was still...
She was civilian.
A Vulcan...
Well, initially she was. She was commissioned eventually, but...
Yes. Back in the holding area, Kira demands to know how Daryl knew of her membership in Shakaar. Daryl reminds her of his earlier remark concerning Maritza's filing system and how efficient it was, claiming to remember her name from an action report. He then challenges Kira to answer some questions of his own, unless Kira is too afraid to do so. And she almost refused, you know, and then he said, unless you're too afraid, Bradness took over and she said, you
nobody
know what?
Likes I'd being called chicken. No.
Yeah. Chicken. Chicken.
Yes. Now, why do we keep going back to Maritza? Maritza's gone. Maritza is not the person we're looking at. Why do we keep going back to Maritza? Question I was asking myself at the time.
Yeah. True. It's the Marty McFly approach. Yes. You calling me chicken?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Well, why do we go back to Maritza? I don't know.
No. Well, we do.
We do, but we don't. We
yeah,
didn't.
We don't. We don't at the moment. Yeah.
Meanwhile, outside the security office, a group of Bajorans has gathered, wearing the dust wraps around their face that prevented Bajoran laborers from being suffocated in the mines. They are survivors of Galitep and Guldaril's brutality, holding a vigil. And that's probably inappropriate, but that's my quote of the week. When Quark tells Odo, you know, oh, it must have been very hard living there with the brutality and things like that. But do you think they would catch a gumball?
Yeah, but that was a very good line.
That was the comic relief of that scene, of that part of the episode.
I don't think I actually chose a quote of the week this week.
That's the only time we saw Quark in this episode, I think.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. As I said, it's such a heavy and dark story. There's no place for a Ferengi that usually brings some kind of comical side of the comical side of the story, or at least a lighter side on the story. So, passing the Bajorans and Quark on the way, Odo goes to the infirmary to consult with Bashir. 3 months previously, there was a request for information on Major Kira from Korra II by Amin Maritza. Odo asks Bashir to look into Maritza's medical records. At this point, Dax informs Odo from Ops that Gul'dukat is responding to his subspace hail and his request for access to the Gardassian government file on Guldaril. After reminiscing for a moment, Dukat denies Odo access to the files, but notes that they would only tell Odo what Dukat himself is telling him. Guldaril is dead. That he is buried underneath one of Cardassia's largest military monuments, and that Dukat himself attended his funeral. Dun, dun, dun.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, so he's dead, but he's not dead. He's there, but he's not there. What is going on? I was yes. Like, what? One of them is lying. Either the one in the cell or Gul'dukat to, I don't know, protect something. Or maybe Dukat believes it was Daryl, but it was not. I don't know. I'm completely lost at this point.
Monica says that if Bajor had a GDPR, then Kira could probably sue.
Yes, probably. But, you know, it's always like that. There are lots of stuff publicly available on staffed personnel.
We already know they don't really care much about security. Physical or data.
Yeah, true. Maybe it's you know, it's open. It's a everything's open.
Open data. It's a thing.
Odo tells Dukat that the man in his custody has admitted to being Daryl, shocking and enraging Dukat. He accuses Odo of a plot to discredit the Cardassians, and Odo suggests that access to Daryl's file would prove Dukat's case. Dukat relents and gives Odo limited access to the files. I have to say, I didn't really understood the logic in that. Dukat doesn't want to give access to the file to Odo because he thinks it's a plot. And then Odo says, yeah, well, you know, it might be a plot, but I can help you. Doesn't really work for me, but hey, why not?
It's the fact that Dukat accused Odo of a plot to discredit the Cardassians in the first place, which makes no sense at all. It's not like Odo is making this up.
Yeah.
But Odo, well, I can prove it if you let me look at your restricted files. And he's like,
yeah, okay.
What? Okay.
I suppose I can give you limited access.
Limited access. What does that mean anyway?
Well, read only.
We'll give you all the files. They will all be redacted. You will see nothing, but you'll have access to the file.
Yeah. Good point.
Can have I have access? A blank piece of paper.
In the brig, the prisoner whom Kira still believes to be Daryl asks her how many Cardassians she killed. Kira claims not to have kept count, but the prisoner suggests that she did, and that she also targeted Cardassian civilians on Bajor, noting that one of the most effective terrorist weapons was random violence. Kira admits to regretting some of the things she did during the occupation, but insists that she had no choice. Bajor was fighting for its survival. The prisoner claims that the Cardassians were doing the same. They had an empire to manage and protect, and I had urgent need of Bajoran resources. He finishes on the note, what you call genocide, I called a day's work. And I was like, again.
Yeah.
That's too...
It's a big
very
statement.
Heavy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. At that point, Odo arrives and asks to speak to Kira outside. He tells her that based on the research he and Dr. Bashir have carried out, the man in the cell apparently wanted to be caught. Dun, dun, dun.
I don't get where that came from. How do you come to that conclusion?
I think that's they explain that later. Yeah, I think it's the next paragraph. Well, they explain everything he did to end up on Deep Space Nine.
Oh, I see. I'm assuming that they would have already worked it out and told us, but no, you're right. They tell us in a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Act 5, final act of this episode. In the Commander's office, Kira, Odo, and Sisko assemble the evidence at hand. Odo shows Sisko a death certificate for Daryl's, included among the files which Ducat gave Odo access to, that lists him as having died 6 years previously from a massive colibric hemorrhage. I'm not doing that a second time. Kira denounces the certificate as fake, a Cardassian ruse to trick station authorities into releasing him. Odo presents further evidence supplied by Ducat showing that on the day of the accident at Galitep, when all known cases of Kalanora syndrome were contracted, Daryl was back on Cardassia, being awarded the Proficient Service Medallion, and thus never actually contracted the condition suffered by the man in the cell. Odo also notes that during the prisoner's last 2 weeks on Korra II, he resigned his post at the military academy, put his affairs in order, even providing handsomely for his housekeeper, and booked passage on a ship specifically scheduled to stop at Deep Space Nine, returning him to Bajor's jurisdiction, an unusual choice of travel plan for a Cardassian war criminal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fake. Fake news.
It's a fake news. It's a trap. Yeah. You can't deny it just sounds wrong.
Yeah. Everything now sounds wrong.
Yeah, it does. If this chap is Daryl, well, he can't be.
No, Daryl is dead.
Unless all the information that Ducat gave to Odo is completely and totally fake, which I doubt, then that cannot be Daryl.
Yeah, I agree. But then, who he is? Yeah, exactly.
I have suspicions. I have suspicions.
Oh,
I'm not telling.
No. Don't tell.
No.
It could be Q.
I wouldn't want it. It could be Q. Absolutely.
Kira will hear none of it. Considering the interesting question that the evidence raises, she insists that the prisoner will stand trial on Bajor. Sisko points out that the decision has still to be made, and Kira challenges him to speak to the prisoner for himself. At this point, Dr. Bashir enters with additional medical evidence. Aside from his receiving treatment for cholera, the prisoner's medical history is consistent with his relatively advanced years, with one exception. 5 years previously, he began taking large doses of dermatillerian plasticine, a dermal regenerative agent used to maintain skin resilience after large-scale cosmetic surgery. Kira is unable to deny the obvious conclusion of all the evidence, that the man in the cell is not Daryl. Ta-da-da!
Dun,
but someone
dun, dun.
Who has been surgically altered to resemble him.
Wow.
Da-da-dun. Wow, exactly.
Wow. Nothing else. Just wow.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's it. There's really nothing.
There's nothing more. No.
No. So stop talking about that. I mean, it's not like we can talk and talk and talk for hours about nothing.
No.
No, we can't.
No.
Can't we?
We do every week.
Oh, yes. That's true. That's true. Kira returns to the brig to confront the prisoner. She asks the prisoner how he came to contract Kalanora syndrome when his own progress reports showed him to be on Cardassia at the time receiving the Proficient Service Medallion. The prisoner denounces the report as inaccurate, but Kira asks him why he is taking a dermal regenerative, and even begins to fill out the gaps. Increasingly frantic, in his Daryl role, He demands that Kira leave and yells for security to escort her out.
Getting far too close.
Yeah, and his act is crumbling, you know. It's not going the way he planned or wanted, and he's backed into a corner. We are going to know pretty soon what is going on.
Yes.
The prisoner begins detailing how he ordered his guard to slaughter the laborers on Galitep while the useless office clerk were busy packing their precious files. And this prompts Kira to ask why, if that was his opinion of them, did he take Maritza's name? The prisoner continues to ignore Kira's question, proceeding to rant and rave over Bajor and the Bajorans. As she listens to him, Kira's demeanor changes, and she tells him straight, he is Maritza. That's not true. I'm alive. I will always be alive. It's Maritza who's dead. Maritza, who was good for nothing but cowering under his bunk and weeping like a woman, who would every night cover his ears because he couldn't bear to hear the screaming for mercy of the Bajorans. He would only... And with that, Amin Maritza breaks down and sinks into his bunk, weeping uncontrollably. I was like, wow.
Right.
Strike three.
Can we just rewind a bit?
Yeah.
So... The man who appeared on Deep Space Nine, who was believed to be Galdahiel, who claimed to be a filing clerk called Maritza, who was then revealed to be Galdahiel, and has now been revealed to be Maritza.
For real. Yes. Exactly.
How many twists and turns can one Star Trek episode cope with?
Well, I guess we've reached
We must have reached it. Wow. Well, it's not even the end of the episode. It could be Galdahiel again for all we know. Flip. That's quite amazing.
Maritza goes on. I covered my ears every night, but I couldn't bear to hear those horrible screams. You have no idea what it is to be a coward. To see those horrors and do nothing. Maritza's dead. He deserved to be dead. Now sympathetic, Kira moves to release him. You didn't commit those crimes and you couldn't stop them. You were only one man. But Maritza begs her not to reveal his identity, insisting that he has to go to trial as Dariel's so that he can be punished, that all of his people must be punished for what they did to the Bajorans. When she asks him why he's doing this, Maritza replies, for Cardassia. Cardassia will only survive if it stands before Bajor and admits the truth. My trial will force Cardassia to admit its guilt. And we're guilty, all of us. My death is necessary. Kira, now emotional herself, replies, what you're asking for is another murder. Enough good people have already died. I won't help kill another. Strike four. Wow. I mean, when we review those episodes, we're usually joking around and, you know, saying stuff, but I really don't have anything to say.
I'm reliving watching this episode, and I have nothing to say, and even if I did, I couldn't say anything.
Yeah. Well, I can assure you that even the fourth time you watch this episode, it's still heavy each time.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the actor who played Maritza, but he was
I had it.
Even with the prosthetics something. And everything, he was really great. He played the first part of the episode. He was like light and you know, almost likable. Then he turned into this horrible monster, proud of all the atrocities he did, and then he crumbles and turns into this man who's weeping and is very sad and sorry and he played that very, very well. The three emotions that he carried.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, yes.
His name is Harris Yulin.
Well, congratulations, Harris Yulin. You did a good job.
I don't believe he played any other characters on it, any other episodes.
Okay.
See, I thought I recognized him from somewhere else, but I've had a look at his article on Memory Alpha, and I can't actually find anything else that I would have seen that I would have recognized him from.
Maybe a quick search on IMDb could reveal something.
He just I don't know. He just has one of those voices that reminds you of somebody. Mm.
A little later, Kira and Odo walk Maritza along the promenade to a ship that will take him back home to Korra too. Maritza says there is nothing for him to go back to, but Kira promises that the authorities will help him get back on his feet. Maritza is bitter at Kira, as Gul'dan, his trial might have helped bring about a new Cardassia. As a lowly filing clerk, he can do nothing. But Kira says that if Cardassia is to change, it will need men of honor like Maritza to help it. It was good to see that Kira is now, you know, she could easily have stayed in this, I don't want to talk to Cardassian people, but no, she made peace with that, and she now respects Maritza for what he tried to do. And it's good because it means there's still hope, because if Kira can do that, then the other Cardassians can do, Bajorans can do that. There's hope that someday, you know, that might be actual peace between Cardassia and Bajor. So, yeah, I was pleased to see the change in Kira.
They had to go full circle. They had to go back to... The episode ended with how it started, and it was this reconciliation within Kira's own mind that made her realise that actually she was being completely unreasonable about her initial behaviour towards Maritza. So it had to be reconciled by the end of the episode, if not for Kira, but for the episode as a whole.
Suddenly, Kanan reappears from out of the crowd and stabs Maritza in the back, wounding him fatally. Odo apprehends him before Maritza even hits the floor, and the distraught Kira demands to Kanan, why? He wasn't Daryl. Why? Kanan's sneered reply is that he's a Cardassian, that's reason enough. Maritza is already dead, as Kira replies, as much to herself as to anyone else. No, it's not. Strike 5. Yeah, and that's how the episode ends. And I was like, wow. Yeah, very, very not typical Star Trek, and not typical Deep Space Nine as we've seen so far. I mean, it's 19th episode, I think, something like that. We didn't have any episodes that heavy in the previous weeks.
No, this is by far and away the most hard-hitting episode. I'm going to suggest it's probably the most hard-hitting episode we have reviewed as part of this podcast.
Yes. Yes, I was waiting for you to say it's the hard-hitting of all Star Trek, but no. Nope.
I've not seen all Star Trek, so I don't know.
Well, I don't know if Monica is still listening in the chat, but I would put this episode on the same level as The Valor of a Man from Next Gen's late seasons, when Picard is captured by a Cardassian.
Okay.
And it's also a very heavy episode. So watch that if you have the occasion. Well, you will have in like 17 years when we review that.
Yeah, roughly. Yes, yeah.
Gen.
Yeah. if we keep taking breaks, yes, it will be 17 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So Monica says it's a fair comparison. Yeah, I think so. Mm. I think so too. It's one of those episodes that are Star Trek episodes that could easily not be Star Trek episodes. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does. It does.
So, in its globality, what did you think of this episode, Dave? I think we know already, but...
Wow.
Yes. Thank you.
This episode has shot straight to the top for me. Out of all episodes we have ever reviewed of Star Trek, this is probably the one that has affected me the most. The story... I'm struggling now. The storyline of this is relevant even now. The message behind it is relevant now.
It's timeless.
It shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't be. But
it probably is. We've already called out, was it Harris Yulin and Nana Visitor's acting? I think both of them were absolutely so, so good. So, so good. 90% of the episode was them two anyway. So it's not a surprise. The supporting actors were brilliant in and of themselves. I think if Quark hadn't been in that episode for the 30 seconds he was, it may not have been as good, because it was nice to have that little break.
Yeah.
To kind of take you back a bit before you ended up trucking on with it. I can't say any more than this. It was such a good episode. Definitely my favourite episode of Star Trek thus far. And it's ironic, when we get to the trivia, I've got a piece of trivia that will actually surprise you.
Okay.
But amazing.
Yeah, I have to agree. I don't have a lot to say that we haven't said already. It's just like this episode, you kept getting punched in the face. That's my conclusion. Mm. I mean, each time you have when Maritza pretends to be Daryl and that goes on, you know, with saying all those things he said about what he did, like okay, boom, first punch, and it keeps coming. Yeah, very good episode. One of those memorable ones. Definitely the best of the first season so far. Well, there's only one left in the first season of Deep Space Nine. But yeah, I would, as I said earlier, I would place that next to The Valor of a Man, which is one of the I think it's been classified as one of the best Star Trek episodes ever. And Monica says, you can start seeing the glimpses of the heaviness that will be the reboot with episodes like this. Yeah. So, yeah, go watch it. If you're listening to this review and you wonder, we've read the review, so you know about the episode. But I would encourage you, if you haven't seen this episode, to go and watch it. Mm. It doesn't need to be watched in sequence with any other ones. It's a very good episode that's standalone. Watch it, and then come watch it and send us your reviews, or better yet, contact us with one of the means we'll give you later on, and join us one of those days to tell us what you think.
Yeah, totally. If you've been listening to this for any length of time, you'll know that I'm not often lost for words. This episode, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. That's that's it. So how about we conclude this review before we start, you know, rumbling and saying stuff that don't make sense. Well, that make even less sense.
Even less sense. Yes.
Usually, yes.
Yes.
Do you have? I know you had. You have, because you said you have trivia for us.
I've got a boatload of trivia. I'm actually going to pare this down because there's so much amazing stuff here. I'll start with this one because this is the kicker. This was a bottle episode.
A bottle episode?
Yeah, it's one of the ones basically that they write as a filler because they've got no money left.
Oh. Okay.
The writer, or the screenplay writer of this episode, Peter Allen Fields, the producers went to him and said, Pete, can you do a favour? Can you write us a show that costs nothing?
Hmm?
And he said, yeah, all right. And we just watched it. Yes. And isn't that weird that all the money you throw at something, all the money you put into production and effects and all the rest of it, actually it means nothing when you don't spend that money and you end up with something of higher quality as this. It's quite amazing.
Isn't it related? I mean, if you're going to have special effects and you know, stunts and stuff like that, then your energy is spent on thinking about that and not thinking about the story. But then when you're told, okay, we don't have a budget for special effects, we are not going to have, you know, people chasing through the station, we're not going to do multiple shots and stuff like that, so write us a simple story. And then that's it. You don't have to think about anything else, and you think about that story, and it was a great story. So kudos to the writers.
Completely. This is one of only a few DS9 episodes that do not have a subplot.
Indeed.
Usually, you get your A-plot and B-plot stories throughout the majority of the episodes, but this is one of the few that they did not.
But again, if you have A-plots and B-plots, then, well, let me put that the other way around. If you don't have a budget, then having only one plot, it saves you from having the whole cast on the show, maybe filming on two locations, doubling the cameras and stuff like that.
Right.
It only makes sense that it's a single plot story.
Yeah. But it allows you to engage with it more, allows you to emote with it more. The introduction of Quark into the episode, as you quite rightly pointed out, that was his only appearance. it makes you wonder why they did it at all. But like we've already said, we kind of needed that.
Yeah.
Just a little break of seriousness to give us to remind us where we were.
Yeah.
The episode introduces the character of Neela that we mentioned earlier on. Not going to read the rest of that because it's a huge spoiler to next week's episode. However, she was originally supposed to be in last week's episode. I'm not quite sure the reasons why she didn't, but she was supposed to be in the one that we can't pronounce last week.
Okay. Dramatis personae.
Yeah, that one. Although it's not mentioned in dialogue, the script for this episode stated that Kira was drinking a Ractogino when Sisko confronted her in the Replimat.
Ah.
Yes, the... I want to try one of those, a Klingon coffee.
Yeah, me too, which is a Klingon coffee. There's coffee and Klingon in there. It can only be good.
Yeah. As long as there's no gach in it, then that's fine.
Yes.
Armin Shimerman and Nana Visitor both count this amongst their favourite episodes.
Well, understandably.
Mm-hmm. Terry Erdman, Dave Rossi and Ira Stephen Bear also think that this is one of their favourite episodes.
Understandably.
Michael Piller said amazing positive things about this episode. The writing was powerful. The installment was very thought-provoking.
Yeah.
Terry Erdman and Paula Block in Star Trek 101 list this episode as one of the 10 essential episodes from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I would agree.
Cine Fantastique ranked Duet as the best episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. There's a theme happening here.
Yes, and I haven't read those things before the review. And so, yeah, it proves we're right once in a while.
Yeah. In the book, The 50-Year Mission, The Next 25 Years, Mark Altman and Edward Gross remark that this episode is generally considered the standout show of the first season.
Yeah.
And specifically called out Harris Yulin's acting. In the new Trek program guide, the authors comment that Duet was the pinnacle of the season, a tightly plotted and elusive tale that could be about the Simon Westenhall Center, the modern Nazis' rewriting of World War II, or even Bosnia.
Yeah.
There was actually another mention, which I must have removed, that the description of the labour camp was an analogy to some of the labour camps that existed during World War II as well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, pick your conflict.
True. Absolutely. And the final piece of trivia I've got here... Mary Taylor, I'm not sure who she is. Oh, Adventures in Time and Space. She wrote that the episode Duet continued the commentary on racism that began 30 years before during the original series. The lesson was that each individual should be judged on their own merits and not because they are a member of a hated race.
Yeah, that was obvious in this episode.
And that's the circle I spoke about with Kira at the start and the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And with Star Trek's uncanny ability to, even decades on, still be referencing topical and current circumstances and situations, it's uncanny that you used the word earlier on, you used the word timeless.
Yes.
Some of Star Trek's episodes and the subject matter they cover is absolutely timeless, and it shouldn't be. But I'm so glad it is, because it wouldn't have had the same effect if the question of racism and how we treat people because of where they're from and not the person themselves is so topical, it's so current. If it wasn't, this episode wouldn't have the same impact now.
Yeah.
And as Monica just said, it speaks to any occupation, yeah, and violent pushback. Totally.
Absolutely.
So, there it is.
Yeah.
I am absolutely shattered.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I suggest we go to our housekeeping and try and lighten the mood a little bit.
Lighten the moon a bit. And,
well, we can try and light the moon. I mean, I can shine a light to the moon. I don't know if that would be very effective, but
I'm sure they could see it.
So that will end our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1 Episode 19, Duet. So, thanks to all of you for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by changing your appearance to one of a Care Bear or Unicorn, jump on clouds, and drop little red hearts with the name of our show on it. Or if you think you're too scared of heights to even consider turning into a giraffe, you can simply share the address of our website on social media.
Oh, dear. I wonder if there is such a thing as a giraffe that's afraid of heights.
Could be.
Life's big questions.
You could ask. Do you speak giraffe?
Do you know any giraffes?
No.
No, no, nor me. Oh, well.
Can look on the internet.
And you can find our website at tlgreyheart.org, where you'll find our show notes, all of our reviews, and you can leave a comment at the bottom of every one of our episodes.
If you want to contact us to tell us how good this episode was or how bad our review was, you can send us an email at feedback@tlgreyheart.org. Make sure that you tell us if you don't want to be your name to be associated with the show, and honestly, I wouldn't. So,
very good point made there. Just because it's a good episode, it doesn't necessarily make it a good review.
Nope.
Tell us. You can do that on Twitter and Facebook. Our username on both of those is TEGH Podcast. And we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGH Podcast. Don't forget, we also stream the live recording of these episodes, for what they're worth, on Twitch at twitch.tv/TEGH Podcast. The recordings take about 7 hours. The end of... the end episode's about 3/4 of an hour. So, yeah, you miss a lot.
Yes. And we would like to thank Ro and Monica for joining us this evening in the chat and the Twitch chat.
We actually have a few more people than that
we
in
do?
There, but they have not spoken to us. Academy well. Impossible, Aiton, Have This Too, Social Friends 11, and Violets_TV.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always, we have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
And the rest of this show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share alike license. There is a page somewhere on our website that tells you what all that means.
Probably. I would like to know what a creative is.
If you search for it, you'll find it.
And this podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network for the list of our shows and hosts.
Indeed so. Now, next episode will be our end-of-season extravaganza of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 20, In the Hands of the Prophets. And it will be one of those mishmash melting pot episodes where we're going to try and get as many of our past guests to come and join us to help us review this episode. And basically what gets recorded is what's going to get sent out as a podcast in 3 or 4 months' time.
I'm editing, so I'm okay with that.
Well, you're not editing, are you? You're just going to, like, top and tailor.
Actually not editing, yes. I just wanted to add some precision here. If you want to join and never was a guest on our show, you can do that. Just give us a shout on Telegram, or join the Telegram group. That's where we're going to post the link. Probably post it on Twitter too, but the sure place where we will get the link to join what will probably be a Jitsi call, it's our Telegram group, t.me/tghpodcast.
Awesome stuff. Looking forward to it. It's going to be great. The end of season extravaganzas are usually really, really good.
Yes, and fun.
And I think next week, are we going to work out what we're going to be doing for the next few weeks?
Well, we have a fairly good idea about what we want to do. So what we're probably going to do, because the next... I think it's season four of Discovery coming out.
Yep. We believe it's coming out sometime in October. We don't have a date.
What we're going to do is that we're going to be reviewing the films. And when I say films, I mean Star Trek 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then the next-gen films, and then that's it.
There are no more after Nemesis, no, I don't think. No.
No.
No, there are no more.
No. No more.
Although we're not going to review them all in one go, because the moment that Discovery Season 4 starts, we will stop what we're doing and we will review that.
Yes, and then after Discovery, we're probably going to go back to one of the series. So I call dibs on being a guest on 4. Well, you're going to be guests, says Monica in the chat. Well, you're going to be guests twice.
Because Star Trek going to 4, get... that is the voyage home, isn't it?
I hope she's talking about the Voyager and not the hypotheticals.
Well, there is no four of the hypotheticals.
No.
Yet.
Not yet. But let's wait for Monica's
response. There be whales, Captain.
Ah, there be whales, yeah. Yes. Well, you're going to be guessed twice because we're going to cut those movies in two and do two reviews. Well, two episodes per movie, so.
Sorry, if I may.
You may.
Hello, computer.
Dave says, talking to his mouse. Go back and watch that movie if you didn't get the reference.
Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, is one of the best original series films. Definitely.
Yeah, it's one of... When I decide to rewatch the movies, I usually start at four. The first three...
I start at three. The Wrath of Khan... Wrath of Khan is a good film. Caroline won't watch it because of the earwormy things.
Yeah.
The motion picture is just a feature-length episode. You know, it's not much more than that.
And it's getting very old now.
It is. It's a very good storyline. I kind of like the storyline, but it is quite... 1979, I think, that came out. So 10 years after the season ended. Yeah, it does. It does. But yeah, episodes 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 are my favourites by a long way.
Yes. All right. I guess this is the end of this episode of The Old Grey Hut. Thank you, Dave, for joining me on this review.
I couldn't have missed this episode. I really couldn't.
What a review. Yes, what an episode.
Totally.
We will be back next week with a lighter review, I hope. And given that we're going to have like 500,000 guests, it's going to be light and chaotic.
This will be interesting.
In the meantime, well, take care of yourselves and we will see you in 1 week. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
Good coffee. Coffee good.
Coffee is good.
And so it begins. Yes, it begins.
Yeah. Eventually.
Well, finally. I mean, we're less than 30 minutes late, so that means we're about 3 minutes early on our usual lateness.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. On the yardstick that is our timekeeping.
Yeah. The disease originated from a mining accident at the Gallitep labor... Why are those sentences... Cut at the wrong point.
Drink some more coffee.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Let's see.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? You can't hear me, can you?
Duet. Yes, that's the name of the duet.
Duet. Duet.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.